Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 132, recorded December 18th, 2013. Kevin Kelly. Triangulation is brought to you by Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit shows anytime, anywhere, on your TV, PC, smartphone, or tablet. Visit HuluPlus.com/TRI to start your free two-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/TRI. And by Tonks Coffee. Tonks offers a bi-weekly subscription. Sourcing their beans directly from growers, they're roasted and shipped within 24 hours, giving you the freshest coffee beans in the world. For a free sample, visit tonks.org/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get some of the most interesting minds on the internet together and talk about stuff. And I'm so thrilled to welcome Kevin Kelly to Triangulation, in person, too, which is really nice. He's just published the most amazing must-have book that you can't get for the holidays. Cool Tools, a catalog of possibilities. Kevin, welcome to Triangulation. It's great to have
you. It's great to be here at this sacred site.
You're a really interesting person. I seem to remember that you worked on the Whole Earth catalog.
Way back in the day.
With Stuart Brand.
I worked with Stuart Brand on some of the later catalogs, including the first Whole Earth software catalog in around 1984.
Wow.
And with Stuart, we started the first Hackers Conference.
What was that?
That was inspired by the fact that there was three generations of hackers, in the good term.
Hardware hacking, kind of.
Hardware, software hacking from MIT who had never met. And so our idea was to bring them all together for the first time. We met at Fort Cronkite in a camp in a wooden bunk where everybody was washing their dishes. And Ted Nelson, and among others, were there.
Creator of Hypertext. Also a Sausalito houseboat dweller.
Exactly. to kind of look at what we were trying to invent. And we had I was the first mention of open source software. It was called Freeware. And we were talking about the hackers and the role of hacking.
Was Richard Stallman there?
Richard Stallman was there. Steve Wozniak was
there. The MIT hackers meeting the West Coast hackers like Woz.
And some of the new generation of Silicon Valley hackers who were going to meet the Greybeards. The legendary guys who really kind of started working on code.
What year was that?
This was 1984.
What an amazing conference that would have been.
It was. It went on on and on and on. And it was really remarkable because this was kind of the big, we were trying to introduce the idea of hacking as a good term.
Right.
Of course, it never succeeded.
Even by 84, people were thinking of hackers as bad guys.
Yeah. And so that didn't work. That part didn't work.
No, there was this move afoot to call them crackers, but nobody was going to do that.
Right.
But the good news is, I think to a great degree, people nowadays know that there's two kinds of hackers, or there's black hats, white hats, and gray hats.
Right.
Even the general public, I think, knows that there's some kinds of hacking, thanks to the makers
sure.
movement. There's some kind of hacking that's good. And of course, Mark Zuckerberg has Hacker Day at Facebook,
right.
So it can't be bad.
Right. There seems to be the verb is good and the noun is bad.
Don't be a hacker, but you can't hack.
Right.
Okay, I like it. This Whole Earth catalog must have been the inspiration for this because it really feels like the full color, the Whole Earth catalog you always wanted, Cool Tools, is so beautiful.
Right. If the original Whole Earth catalog was this guide to do-it-yourself tools for the hippies who were moving back to the country and were building their own houses and trying to grow their own food and do homeschooling, and they kept reinventing the wheel. And the original idea from Stuart Brand was he actually had a truck that was outfitted as a store, and he drove around to all the communes saying, hey, here's a really great tool. Here's Aladdin lamp, which is the best kerosene lamp there is. It's like 10 times as bright as your typical hurricane lamp. And he said, and here's a mill for grinding flour, and here's a beekeeping equipment. And he was trying to sell this stuff to these great tools to these people. But he also had a catalog that kind of talked about the different items in his store. Nobody wanted to buy any of the tools. They wanted his catalog.
Yeah.
So he said, forget selling the truck store. I'm just going to produce this catalog, which got bigger and bigger and bigger until it was this big and this thick. And it listed all the ways in which you could do things yourself.
It was kind of the farmer's almanac for the hippies.
It was the farmer's almanac, but it was actually over time it became more. It became the web before there was the web.
Oh, you're right. In a book form, yeah.
It was the book form. It was the web on newsprint before there was a web.
How interesting, yeah.
Because if you go back and read those, the voice, it was enthusiast, it was sharing, it was informed and esoteric, and it was the web. And we, on the publication side, just took what people wrote, we printed it on newsprint and sent it back to them, to the readers, with no advertising. So it was a circuit, and it was user-generated content. So that kept getting bigger and bigger until the actual web came along, and then it died.
Yeah. Well, you didn't need it anymore.
Didn't need it, because the web did 95% of what the Whole Earth Catalog did, and it just went away.
But that ethos really informed the latter-day Silicon Valley. I know Steve Jobs quoted the back page of the last Whole Earth Catalog, Stay Hungry, Stay Foolish. He and people of, and I'm of that generation too, were very much influenced by that ethos.
Right. And it was because there was, buried in it was part of the sharing economy, the gift economy.
Information wants to be
free, wants to be open. The maker movement arose from there of kind of do it yourself, hacker spaces. All these things were kind of, and not to mention organic food and everything else.
It's populist.
Yes.
Is that right?
Populist. Here's what it is. It's the amateur enthusiasts.
Yeah, the enthusiasts. I celebrate enthusiasts.
That's what this was. It was celebrating that. It was trying to help that. And part of what we see now going on in Silicon Valley, including the startups, was based in that.
Yeah.
In fact, the Whole Earth Catalog, when it was at its height in the 60s and 70s, it was one of the few places that it was actually very pro-small business. I mean,
really small business.
Really small business.
Yeah.
Making candles, sandals.
Right.
But out of that grew the ethos and some of the skills for the first startups.
Right.
Because they were no longer studying business in school. It wasn't you get an MBA. No, it was that I was selling candles.
Right.
And I know how business
works. I learned about economics from selling stuff. That's a good way to learn.
And I think that was very influential in the sort of Silicon Valley startup culture we have right now.
So the Whole Earth Catalog, the idea was, there was a lot of the best. Like, this is the best lamp. You gave that example. But you, at the beginning of A Cool Tool, say anything, a cool tool is anything useful that increases learning, empowers individuals, does work that matters, is either the best or the cheapest, or the only thing that works. So you've broadened the definition a little bit.
I have, but in fact...
Did you think long and hard about this
I did.
Epigram?
I did, because, in fact, the Whole Earth Catalog itself was not just reporting on the best. It was also really concerned about things that were easily accessible. So it was a big promoter of a mail order. So what we don't want to do in this book, which is what a lot of websites do today, is talk about things that aren't for sale yet.
Right.
That you can't get. I don't want to tease people.
There's no point.
There's no point. I'm trying to be practical and utilitarian and helpful. So we're going to talk about things that you can get very easily. Of course, nowadays that's easier. And some things are not necessarily, they're the best per dollar, which is a different kind of goodness. And then there's these kind of unique things that there's nothing else like them in the world that you should know about. So there's no comparative there. They're just simply the only thing there is.
Here's the epigram from the original Whole Earth Catalog. Useful as a tool, relevant to independent education. I like that. But you mentioned that. It increases learning. Mm-hmm. High quality or low cost. Not already common knowledge. I like that, too. Mm-hmm. There's some serendipity, some surprise. Mm-hmm. And easily available by mail. And you mentioned that. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't have to worry about that as much. Everything is easily available by mail now.
Right.
Now to get to this book, because this is, I mean, okay, all due respect to the Whole Earth Catalog, which changed the world. This trumps it. It's so wonderful. Every page of Cool Tools you look at and you go, oh, that's great. Oh, I want that. Oh, that's really neat. How did this come about?
So there's several different strands. One is, as I mentioned, I worked on the Whole Earth catalogs. The web came along, it died, and but it was too good of an idea to let go. So in fact, I continued it privately as an email list.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I had an email
through
list.
Through
the well originally, but then just
via email.
And the idea was I kept doing this, and I sent my reviews to my friends. And
so you've been writing this book ever since,
right,
basically.
And they said, my friends said, oh, can you put my friend of a friend on? And I said, yes, under one condition. Anybody can get this newsletter if you recommend one tool to me. So the way you got on the list,
right,
was you recommended a tool.
Right.
That was what fed this list, and it got bigger and bigger. And when blogging came along in the early aughts, I moved it to a blog. And then, so this is user-generated content. The readers write it, and I publish it. And
so if I go to kk.org, your website, are the remnants of this blog still there?
It's still going daily. We add a new tool every day, every weekday. And for 10 years, we've been doing
that. Oh, that's neat.
So it's still going very strong. So this book was the best of those 10 years publicly. That's one way to answer the question is this came from 10 years worth of cool tools on a daily basis. And the idea, of course, is that these tools are all positive recommendations. We don't do any negative reviews.
Yep.
Why waste your time? Life is very short.
Yep.
We talk about the best. And secondly, these are all have links and are all written by people who've used the tool and love it. So it's not just like a lot of websites or gadget sites. They're pointing stuff to you that they think sound cool,
right,
or it looks cool.
Right.
No, we're talking about someone who has used this tool, is intimately familiar with it, and all the other ones like it. So
they're experts.
They are local, regional, nano experts on one particular thing. So it's written by enthusiasts, and it's recommendations. And this book is the best of that over 10 years.
So I was all impressed at how much work you must have put into this. This is just collating a bunch of
right.
blog posts.
This is 10 years of work from blog posts.
A lot of work.
Right.
Yeah, but not starting from scratch.
Not starting from scratch.
One big difference, of course, it's in beautiful color.
That's right.
And you self-published this. You didn't go to a publisher. Why not?
Right. There's four different reasons why not. The main and first reason was speed. I finished writing that book and putting it together in September.
Of this year?
Of this year.
Oh, yeah.
That is
fast.
I got this in November, maybe in
October.
And if I was working with a New York publisher, we would still be in negotiations about getting it into Christmas next year.
Oh, yeah.
So speed. The second one was there is in this book, which is very unique, is QR codes. So every item has a QR code that will link to where you can purchase that item. Okay? Well, a lot of those links go to Amazon because Amazon carries everything.
Right.
Well, most New York publishers think of Amazon as their enemy.
Yeah, that's right.
So they look at this book and say, there's too much Amazon in this. They actually asked me, can you take that out?
Oh, no. This is what makes it useful.
Exactly. So I don't want to have to deal with that. So that's the second reason. It's like,
good reason.
Screw that.
Yep.
The third reason is that...
Let me ask, do you make Amazon referral affiliate codes?
Yes.
So this is an annuity as well.
It could be.
Yeah.
It remains to be seen whether anybody actually orders things.
You don't know yet.
We've only been out a week. And
this has been out a week?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's only been out a week.
You're already sold out.
Yep.
I should warn people now, before you get to reason number three, you didn't use a publisher, you can't get it.
Until after Christmas.
They're sold out at Amazon.
Right. Until after Christmas.
So we're really teasing people.
Unfortunately.
I feel bad.
Yes, but just don't think of it as a Christmas gift. Think of it as a New Year's gift.
Yeah, give them a card and say, you're getting this.
Yeah, right. So
reason three.
Third reason was the last book I did, which was a book about how... The philosophy of technology.
What technology wants.
Technology
I think we
wants.
Talked to you when it came out, actually.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
I hired an editor to do my book I hired the illustrator to do the illustrations.
You did it yourself.
And I did the cover and the spine.
What did the publisher do?
I did all the PR work. I was the first person to do Google Hangouts for a book.
Oh, that's neat.
And I did a whole month of them.
Oh, that's neat.
I had a Google calendar and people could sign up for what.
Oh, that's great.
I said, if you buy 9 books, I'll do a Google Hangout with you for an hour.
Wow.
Okay.
That's awesome.
And I did it for a whole month.
That's really neat.
And I did all the PR. So, like, what's the publisher doing? Well, they're the bank. They gave
You're
me
taking
advance.
Some money.
They gave me advance.
Yeah.
Well, I said I could give myself an advance,
right?
And then I'll do this whole thing myself. So that's the third reason. And I think that altogether, it just made a lot more sense to self-publish it. However, there's a downside to self-publishing a book like this.
What's that?
This thing weighs almost 5 pounds.
It's heavy. Well, and you didn't do print on demand. This is you.
It couldn't. Nowhere would do print on demand for this size book in cover.
Really?
Nowhere.
Interesting.
In fact, I tried to get this book published in the U.S. and all the U.S. printers said, "We hate to tell you this, but you're going to have to go to China because we can't even print it here anymore."
So, normally, if somebody self-publishes, they can really save a lot of money and eliminate almost all risk by print on demand. You only print it when it's ordered.
It's fantastic, and I have done books that way, and it's really great.
There's no upfront cost.
There's no upfront cost, and they do fulfillment. They send it out. It's all great.
Yeah.
But this is a different experience, and we can talk about why this book has to be in paper, but it does have to be in paper. But if you
as opposed to a digital book.
Yeah, right.
An e-book. I don't know. There's an aesthetic to having this on your coffee table or in your bathroom or somewhere where you just this is made to browse.
This is an experience.
It is an experience.
When you have this thing open up and it opens up all the way on your lap, it's bigger than a beach blanket. And what happens is that there are a number of different items on each page, and your brain is in some way making unconscious associations between everything on this page.
Mm-hmm.
And that little additional work that your brain is doing, it's like listening to radio. You don't see it, so your brain has to fill in things itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that unconsciously makes it more intimate for mm-hmm. you. It makes it more immersive.
There's a connection.
And that's what's happening when you look at this big page and you're going through it, is your brain unconsciously is making connections between things without you even knowing it. And it feels as if you're there. It feels as if you fell into this wonder world.
You can't stop browsing through.
Right.
It's like the early days of the web where you would spend hours clicking and clicking and clicking and clicking.
It is a web on paper.
Yeah.
And that's the reason to do it. And the reason why there's no electronic version except the website already. And so that I spent many, many evenings studying the old Whole Earth catalogs and kept saying, what is it about this thing?
Why is it so engrossing?
Exactly. You can't buy anything. They're all out of date. But there's something about having all these things connect together in your brain. And I said I wanted to recapture that magic, that buzz that you get, and the 3D navigation of going through this and being able to kind of flip through and make these associations. I wanted to try and capture that, and that's why this is in a very heavy, very atomic material thing. And self-publishing, that meant that I have to deal with, megatons of paper and ink.
You said the next print run is what you said?
70 metric tons of paper.
And not cheap paper. This is unlike the Whole Earth catalog, which was printed on wood pulp. This is high-quality, glossy, four-color printing. I mean, it's really gorgeous.
Right, it is. And that color adds something.
Oh, yeah,
to it.
I agree.
It almost makes it like a coffee table book, which the Whole Earth catalogs were not.
This is on my coffee table.
Yeah.
It is. This is my edition that I brought back.
The original Whole Earth catalogs were in your bathroom.
Yeah.
And this one's on your coffee table.
It's 40 bucks. Can you make money on this at 40 bucks?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm trying to.
Yeah.
Right.
And you underestimated in a week.
Yeah.
So the whole first run is gone?
Yeah.
In fact, it's really gone because you had some in your garage.
I had some set aside for reviewers, and I made a promise to people, to the fans, that if they wrote to me by today, I would.
It's too late, though, don't.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's closed.
That's nice of you.
Yeah.
That's really sweet of you.
Right.
Well, I think you don't need to send this out to reviewers. This is just the word of mouth of this is phenomenal. Everybody's very excited about it. It's interesting because I think we live in an age, a post-physical media age.
Yeah.
And I have to say, don't tell anybody, but I actually like looking through a newspaper for the same reason. The large format and the scanning of articles is a different experience than reading an article at a time on a screen.
This is part of the maker movement and this return to understanding the value of physical things as high bandwidth and
it is, isn't sensual. It? You look at one page, sensual and high bandwidth, two very good descriptions.
And I think it's and it's also feeding the maker movement in the sense that there are a lot of the tools in there are about making things on your own. There's actually very few electronic gizmos in here or even apps. And not because I have anything against them, but because they become obsolete so fast.
Right.
I mean, anything that was put in here would be outdated tomorrow.
Right.
So you go to the web to kind of keep up. You know, you go to the wire cutter or somewhere else that really keeps up with the latest gizmos. This is really for tools that aren't going to age so fast that require the other parts of your body. So maybe it's gardening tools or how to do snowshoeing, or you want to make knots, how to tie knots, or you want to
I just love it.
Learn the other full five senses of the body, cooking, learning how to
capture audio,
study how to remember things, all this kinds of stuff. And so the tools is in their broadest sense, not hand tools. I want people to understand that this is like a tool that I use to make this book. Elance.
That's a freelancer's website.
Kind of like eBay for freelancers.
Yeah.
So you specify a job, and you can find a million different freelancers around the world in many different countries who will bid on that job and will do it very professionally, very, very fast, and very reasonably priced, if not cheap. So this book was designed, laid out by Elancers around the world.
You didn't even do the layout. You
in
just
parallel.
Had somebody do that. In parallel.
So that's the beauty of it. Speed. So
how many people worked on the layout?
So what you do is you send out the bid, you get to 200 people who respond to. Whoa. You take 30 of them.
Wow.
And you give them pages, and the best ones you reward with more pages. So we ended up with like 6 to 8 of them working in parallel, and they designed basically the whole book in 25 days.
That's mind-boggling. And that is the reaction I have when I look at this is how long it must have taken to create it,
right.
And then how long it must have taken to physically lay it out. And this is really amazing.
So I used Elance to proof the book in 48 hours.
Wow.
Because we had multiple people working on it.
Wow.
And that's what so Elance is a tool.
Yeah.
99 Designs is a tool.
Yeah, one of our sponsors.
Right? And so I used 99 Designs to try and do the cover.
Oh, that's great. And so this is a 99 Designs cover?
Actually, it's not.
Oh.
But
you started there.
We started there.
Okay? Who did you get to do the cover?
I did the cover in the end.
Oh, I like
it. The artwork is done by a street artist.
And I love it.
I did the design of the cover.
Oh, that's neat.
But 99 Design was extremely useful. I recommend them. They did
same
idea. You crowdsource it out.
Yep.
That's a cool tool.
Yeah.
So it's not just hand tools. It's anything that's useful and that can help you do
things. It's a lever for human thought, for human ability. These are all levers, really.
And you look through it, and there's thousands of tools in here. As you said, I look through it, and I want that, and I want that.
Yeah, I've ordered so many things from this.
But there's something I want to say about that, which is I say in the very first page, which is this is not meant to increase consumerism. I'm not trying to encourage people to buy tools at all. What this is a catalog of possibilities. You need to know that this tool exists.
Yes.
It's the power in knowing that this is an option. That, in fact, if you ever needed it, you could dynamite, a mountain, or that you could rent a bulldozer. Okay?
Yeah.
And
if you don't know it exists, you can't use it.
And sometimes just knowing that a tool exists will provoke certain ideas and ambition that you didn't even know were possible. So this is a catalog of what you can do as yourself or a small group, if you wanted to.
And yet, when you look at it, I got to admit, maybe it's just me. I'm a consumer, I guess. But I look at the Tom Bin bags, and I go, oh, yeah, I want one of those. I look at the portable solar power station. I go, oh, yeah, I need that.
Yeah.
It's kind of But you're right. A lot of it is resources, too.
But you'll put that in your head.
In the back
of my
head.
Someday, when you're on your expedition to New Guinea.
I will need that.
And you're going to climb, or Mount Kilimanjaro. You'll say, I'll need that. I know where to get that.
It's so much fun. We're talking to Kevin Kelly, former editor and of the Whole Earth Catalog. He then was you were a founding editor at Wired, weren't you, at
yes.
the very beginning?
Yes.
With Lewis and...
John Battelle.
John Battelle, that's right. We could talk a little bit about that, too. More to come in just a moment. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Hulu Plus. A great way to turn your iPad, your computer... Actually, nowadays, I can watch Hulu Plus on almost anything. I got it in my TV. I've got it on my Chromecast. I have Hulu Plus on my Apple TV. I have Hulu Plus on my Roku. And, of course, on your iPod and your Android devices and your iPhones and your tablets. What it does is it brings you television, all kinds of television. Thousands of hit TV shows and movies on the go. You can watch your favorite TV shows like Jimmy Kimmel Live or Shark Tank or Family Guy. I'm never able to stay up late for Saturday Night Live, and sometimes when I do, I wish I hadn't. So what I... Almost Human. Must watch. Really fun show. Oh, original Star Trek. Every Star Trek episode is on Hulu Plus. You also get a massive collection of ad-free movies, kids' content. The Voice. See, it's really, the catch-up thing, it's so great. Full episodes of Doctor Who, Star Trek, Community, Lost. Hulu Originals, The Wrong Man's... Behind the Mask. You could try it free right now. There couldn't be a better time to try this than right now. The holidays are here. People are coming over. You got to entertain the family. They've got kids stuff. They've got grown-up stuff. If you go to HuluPlus.com/TRI, you can get a two-week free trial. That's the longest trial they offer, 2 weeks free. Hulu Plus, HuluPlus.com/TRI. Get your 2 weeks started today. You get right through into the new year. HuluPlus.com. I wanted to mention, we were talking about self-publishing, and we've had Guy Kawasaki on here, and his book, Ape, author, publisher, entrepreneur. Isn't it good?
I recommend it in this book as the best thing for self-publishing.
Yeah. Well, he's given it away, and he wanted me to tell everybody that because it's their one-year anniversary, he's giving the Kindle edition away for free. If you go to Ape the Book, APETHEBOOK.com/NaNoWriMo. I guess November is the National Writing Month. NaNoWriMo. But you have to use this credit by the end of January next year. You'll get a promo code. Don't use my promo code, the one you see on the screen, because everybody gets their own unique promo code, I think. So get it free on the Kindle. We had him on when the book came out.
I think it's a fabulous resource.
It is a great resource.
It really is. Yeah. It's well done.
Yeah, and everybody should self-publish. There's no reason not to.
There really isn't. And in fact, the publishers are hurting so badly that...
I do hate that.
They are coming to anybody who has an audience, and this is the cool thing. It's actually... not that hard to make a book or an artifact or a movie or a song. It's much harder to have it reach an audience.
Right.
And if you have an audience, you're very valuable to even the mainstream publishers because they don't have an audience.
Right. They're looking for somebody who has an audience.
So you can start off, and if you wanted to offload that chore of mm-hmm. making this stuff, if you bring them an audience, you're golden.
Right. Well, and that's how you build an audience. You start self-publishing.
Start small.
But I tell you, if somebody could self-publish this, then there's nothing you cannot self-publish.
That's right.
I mean, now you had a lot of cash. You must have had. Did you ask for investors? Did you go to Kickstarter? Because
nope.
This is, I mean, you got to buy the newsprint before
yes,
you got to pay for the books before you can sell them.
I'm doing another book, a graphic novel.
Are you?
Where we did do a successful Kickstarter
for
that.
Tell me about that.
So this was the premise of the graphic novel, which is, of course, a comic book for adults. It's about angels and robots.
Good start.
And it's about the fact that that these angels want to ensoul our newly conscious robots.
Oh.
And there's a battle, and there's a million different species of angels in the realms, and some of them are better prepared to be souls than others, and the dark souls are. Are getting into our robots, and they're going to be amoral. So there is this one girl on Earth,
Tassi,
who knows about this and is trying to prevent this from happening, and she has to save the world.
Now, did you write this? What is the story behind this?
So I and another guy conceived the story. We worked with some Pixar screenwriters to do the first book, and some ILMN
this
artists.
This is the second.
And we kickstarted funding the concluding book, which was written by a Hollywood screenwriter and me. And it's being illustrated by people who we hired in the ethos.
You find it on DeviantArt and DeviantArt, like
exactly.
That.
We hired on DeviantArt. And the colorist is a guy in Argentina. You know, it's like...
Again, you're crowdsourcing everything.
We're crowdsourcing. It's this fantastic way to work. And so that we kickstarted for the combined book. And we'll be delivering books in the summer.
These are beautiful.
Also, it'll be printed. And made into a physical book. And that's what books are about these days. Books are about...
Choice.
Choice and the artifact, the
physical
thing.
I do like the physical thing.
So, your beach novel doesn't need to be on a book.
Nobody cares about that Dean Koontz novel.
Right.
You can throw that out of thing.
Your telephone directory long ago found out that it didn't want to be on paper.
Why do they keep putting those on my doorstep? I will...
I was like,
what a way... Who is reading the yellow pages?
Exactly.
Come on.
Yeah.
What do they keep making that for? There must be somebody wants it.
That one old lady somewhere down the
street. I think that's crazy. All those trees dying because they go straight to the recycling bin.
There has to be some, subsidy weird loophole. It's like the classifieds and newspapers. They're being funded by, you make your name change. Or
right. You're required.
The legal. It's totally crazy.
DBA.
To put it on paper. Dead tree flesh.
Dead tree. Yeah. Well, but you're not. And this is what I find really cool about you, Kevin. And I guess that's kind of what technology wants is kind of about, too, is that you've got to be appropriate to the medium.
Yeah.
Or the medium has to be appropriate to the content, I guess, other way around.
Right. We want choices. Books are never going to go away. There will always be some books printed on paper because it's an everlasting media. It will never go obsolete. 1,000 years from now.
You don't need a zip drive to read a book.
Exactly. The format is universal, but they will be more and more expensive. I have a two-story library. I mean, it's two stories. It's filled with thousands and thousands of books. I was almost going to get rid of it a few years ago just by scanning it, making it digital.
Yeah.
And I had an epiphany when I visited Rick Predinger's private library. It was stunning. There was a power there, and I realized right now books will never be as cheap as they are right now today.
Right,
you can buy books for a penny and plus shipping.
So are you buying more?
Yes, I'm buying more because in 50 years from now they'll books
be really expensive,
but they'll be very expensive.
They'll be rare,
and they'll be rare, and all those other cheap books they'll just be in the dump by now.
Right.
So if you want to make a library for the ages...
I do.
Now is the time, because you can get books, any book you want, for almost nothing.
It's always my dream to have your two-story library, to be surrounded by books. There's just something about it.
Right, right.
Well, you can see in my office, I've got bookshelves. Right. I mean, I love the physicality of it.
It's fantastic. It's highly evolved. And you saw the old YouTube clip of... somebody invents the book now. Imagine if the book had never been invented.
Yeah.
And all we had was digital stuff, and
along. We'd be blown away.
People would be, I need one of those. Random access. No batteries.
He never died. Infinite battery life.
Right. It's portable. It's, it's like high res. It's, whatever it is, 10K res. It'd be unbelievable. People would be amazed.
I think you've done that with this cool tools. It's like, this is the future. Look at this. wow, that's really I talk all the time. People get very mad at me about the death of physical media. Some physical media, there's really no reason for DVDs or Blu-ray discs. There's nothing magical about owning a digital disc.
Who owns anything?
Why should you own that? But that's not what this is.
No. Yeah, there's in the digital world, we've made this transition from ownership to access.
Right.
Ownership is a liability.
Right.
All right, if you own it, you have to back it up.
Move it and
I call it movage.
Movage.
Not storage, movage.
Movage.
Because you're constantly having to move it.
It's a pain in the butt.
You're always moving it, storing it, backing it up, upgrading it, maintaining it. If you just have access to it and pay your access price... That's better than
owning.
Much
better. Much better.
So I think, by the way, most books would go to the same model as Netflix.
Right.
My prediction, I have no inside knowledge, is that, at least in 10 years or sooner, Amazon would be, you pay Amazon Prime, cost $200 a year.
You can read every book they have.
Any book, any that they have, any time you want, for as much as you want.
I think you're right.
And you just subscribe to books.
I think you're right, but what you will pay for through the nose is the physical medium.
You'll pay
what
for the...
What books are you... So you're collecting now.
Yeah.
What books are you collecting? What books are you buying?
Well, I have probably the one of the Burroughs Best Libraries on do-yourself, how-to
right.
do stuff libraries.
Right.
But also, together with the Long Now Foundation, I'm involved with this other crazy...
Another Stewart Brand crazy idea.
Which is...
A clock that goes for
10,000 years. It's inside a mountain, and it rings a different chime every day for 10,000 years, yeah. whether someone's there or not.
Yeah. And then there's a special chime for a century mark and stuff like
That's
that.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's keeping time, and it's there to remind us to think long term. And it also, together with that, is our library. The library of a long
now. I didn't
now.
Know that.
Yes.
Oh.
And it's a library which has a couple things in it. One is this a bootstrap civilization library.
Ah.
So imagine the Dark Ages, and you have to start off. What's the essential knowledge that you need to...
I'm glad somebody's doing that.
Right. You want
it's
to be
like
able
the
to...
Russian seed bank up in the Antarctic.
Scandinavia,
yeah. Because if you had to start over, would you be able to?
Right. So how do you make steel?
Right.
How do you make paper? How do you, recreate
So many
things?
Technologies are lost.
You know, it's funny. So much of the knowledge that we make, like to make this screen that you're watching, it's not written down anywhere.
Right.
It's all...
It's in somebody's head.
It's all in people's heads. It's like, that's why we can't go back to the moon. We can't get a human back on the moon right now.
Because nobody knows how to do it?
Because
the people who did it are gone.
People who did it are gone or not working. And that's never documented.
Nobody wrote it. You know, I thought it was just us that we didn't document how we did anything. It's everybody.
Right.
Exactly. Well, I know how to do it. I'll just do it. I don't have time to write it down. What are you, crazy?
It's all, a lot of it is really craftsman type knowledge about,
interesting.
If you're making ball bearings, you need to know, the humidity is up, whatever it is.
There's a lot of knowledge.
That's the kind of knowledge.
We visited the Blue Mosque a couple of months ago in Istanbul, and they don't know how to make that blue anymore because, of course, centuries ago, the people who knew died, and nobody had written it down.
Right. So having all the books is not probably enough, but it would be better than nothing. But the problem is a lot of this information hasn't been written down in books.
Wow. So are you making an effort to collate that?
So we are trying to do something in this realm. I have this idea that's called the Forever Book. The Forever Book is very simple. It's a book that tells you how to make itself. It's a book that tells you...
It's a little recursive. I don't...
Yeah, it tells you how to make ink... And tells you how to make paper, and tells you how to print it, so you can
how do you know? How did you? How do you want to know how we did this? We wrote it down in a book.
Right,
it's a recursive book.
Exactly. So if you have a forever book, a book that tells you how to make a book, you could also do a forever library, a library that
how
has
to
all
make
the
a library.
And then of course you do want to do that with civilization too.
Yeah, it's like a fractal, just all the way, turtles all the way down.
So that's one thing that
that is neat.
Right,
you have a lot of energy. Do you feel like that you're in some ways...
I'm only 22 years old.
I know. I don't understand. How did he do that? Do you feel like... You must have been feeling a little vindicated by the maker movement today.
I do.
How exciting is that?
It is. It's fantastic. I was just with the Maker Summit just last week at Sausalito, where we're trying to map out what's going to happen in the maker movement in 50 years. And I think it's going to have tremendous influence on manufacturing, personal expression... It's part of this kind of, finding yourself and expressing yourself. It's a type of expression, but it's also going to be the future of manufacturing. A lot of the techniques that are being developed, 3D printing, robotics, are going to rearrange the landscape of how we make things.
Instead of a giant industrial plant, we can do it small scale, local.
Right.
You can build a car in your garage. Kind of stuff.
Yeah, or certainly the parts, or certainly maybe in your neighborhood.
Right. Yeah, instead of going to the car dealer, you'll go to the car builder.
That's right.
Wow, I like that idea.
Right.
Are you essentially an optimist? It seems like you
I am off the chart. I'm the most optimistic person that I've ever met.
It's easy to get pessimistic when you look at what's going on. It's the old bumper sticker. If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention.
Well,
but you don't like it. Let that get you down.
I think if you're not an optimist, you're not reading history. I'm an optimist because I spent a lot of time reading history, and if you look at what we've seen through history, and remember that even 200 years ago, most of the people of the world were hungry all the time.
Right.
all the time.
We've made great progress.
We've made great progress, and we're still making progress.
Yeah.
And the lessons of history is that today is a little tiny bit better than yesterday. Not by very much. And that's why I don't call myself a utopian. I'm a protopian. A protopian is somebody like myself who believes in progress.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like there's going to be some point.
There's no magical Eden
there's no destination.
Waiting for us.
It's not a destination. It's just progress. We are progressing. We're a little tiny bit better, but not very much.
And sometimes it's two steps forward, one step back.
Yep. I think most of the problems in the world today are caused by technology that we invented yesterday, which means that most of the problems we're going to have in the future are going to be caused by technology we're inventing today.
Yeah.
But while technology creates almost as many problems as it solves, it gives us new choices.
The key is almost.
Right. The key is almost. And it's the fact that each of those is a new choice.
Yeah.
We have the choice that we didn't exist before.
Right.
And that little bit of extra choices tips the bounds just ever slightly. And I think it's only 1% difference.
Are we making the right choices?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But
can we push in the right direction?
We are pushing in the right direction because what we know from the world is that people are moving towards more choices. How do we know that? It's because that's what cities are. We're becoming an urban planet because people are moving from these beautiful villages where they eat organic food and they have very strong supportive families. And they're moving.
Well, that's ancient history now.
They're moving by the hundreds of millions into the cities.
Yep.
Why? Where are they living in
slums? Quality of your life has gone down. You don't have the...
No, because they have more choices. They have at least the option of getting education for their children. They have at least the option of health care. They have at least the option of having electricity. They have none of those options in the village. And so
but you
even,
give up so much.
But they're actually getting more choices. They have more choices in the city than they had in the village. Nobody is buying one-way tickets back to the village. You could. Anybody here? It's easy. We could.
They want you to come.
$300.
Back.
You could be on a bus.
Right. Isn't that what happened? It's kind of you've gone full circle because that's what all those hippies that the Whole Earth Catalog served were going back to nature.
Right, but they didn't last very long.
No, they said
This is a bad idea. And I hang out with the Amish a lot because I'm really interested in this sort of opting out.
They're anti-technology.
No, they're not. They're total technology hackers.
Well, we always think of them in their buggies with buttons instead of zippers. What's the story?
It's an amazing story. They are such big hackers. It's unbelievable. They have a thing called Amish electricity, which is pneumatics. So on these beautiful farmhouses, in the back, there's this huge diesel-powered air compressor that's running high-pressure pipes, and they have converted all their appliances to air pressure. So they have air-powered washing machines, air-powered blenders, air-powered
And they do this machines. Because their religion prohibits them from using electricity?
From being connected to society, yes.
Okay, so I guess I have fundamentally misunderstood Amish religion.
Right.
It doesn't say you can't use machines, you can't use technology. It says you can't be connected to mainstream society. You have to be the other.
So whenever they have a new technology come on, they have early adopter Amish. These are all guys who are trying the newest thing, like cell phones, whatever it is.
So they use cell phones?
In certain ways. So here's the thing. Anytime someone uses new technology, they are judging it by two major criteria, two things. Does this technology bring our community together? Or does it send it apart? So the reason why they have horse and buggy is because a buggy can only go 15 miles in maximum.
Right.
So they are forced to shop locally.
Geographically condensed.
Right. To shop locally, visit relatives on Sunday or the sick.
You can't go back.
You can't go
to California because
you can't
buggy
go anywhere.
Can't get you there.
So that's why they have buggies. And the second thing is, does it support our families? So they like to work at home. So either they're farmers or they have a shop out back.
Right.
And all these other technologies of the phone, the cell phone, does the phone send out? Does it make people kind of want to go away from the community? Or does it bring the community together?
So the job of the early adopters is to assess these technologies.
Exactly. So the bishop It's all done locally. The bishop will say, okay, Ivan, you can try this cell phone. But we're all watching you, and we're going to see how that affects your family.
You move closer.
Right. We're going to see whether it affects your family, how you are in terms of your interaction with society.
Go play Angry Birds, but we're going to watch carefully. Right.
Exactly. And then you have to be ready to give it up at any moment, because if we say we don't like what we're seeing, you have to surrender it.
Wow.
So Ivan will do that, and the entire community will talk about how he's what effects the technology has.
Isn't that interesting? That's not viable in a mass way,
it's,
of course.
It's not. It doesn't work. However, it does work in one sense, in that I think there is so much technology that we can't possibly use all of it.
Right.
And so what the Amish have
done... We could be more selective.
We can be more selective. And I think the idea of like taking vacations and sabbaticals from technology is really, really good. Yeah. And what you want to do is... I'm a technological minimalist. We don't have TV at our house. That's true.
Your son's not too happy about
that. No, they don't mind that. I think what we're trying to do is I'm trying to find the minimal amount of technology that works.
Well, TV's a good example of something that does, in fact, kind of split you, doesn't
it? Right.
It puts you in another zone, another world.
Right. Exactly.
But you love movies.
So I have Netflix.
Okay.
Hulu. This kind of stuff. That works. It's on demand. We can have some control over it.
Ah.
It's selection. I can be selective.
This is fascinating. So this is becoming at choice about what you do. Instead of automatically just saying, I'm going to do it. It's new. I'm going to use it.
No, I really think people should try things and then discard very liberally.
I love it. We're talking to Kevin Kelly. He's the author of a ton of books. Out of Control was the mid-90s. Huge, very important book. In fact, it was required reading for the cast of The Matrix.
That's right.
When they made the movie, The Matrix is one of three books everybody had to read. Keanu Reeves said, whoa. New Rules for the New Economy, 10 Strategies for a Connected World. Cool Tools is the newest. But don't try to get it. Well, you could probably order it on Amazon. You just won't get it until after Christmas.
Right.
That's okay.
You could have it after Christmas.
Get it for the new year. When will the next metric ton of books arrive?
December 30th.
Oh, soon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a book for all year that will enable you and open up possibilities for things that you can do.
Wonderful. Were you disappointed that you had to print it in China?
I would have liked to print it in the U.S. because of the speed. In other words, there was a 30-day crossing on the big ships.
It's interesting that the big printers... So this has already been printed. It's on a boat.
That's right.
It's on a slow boat from China.
It's on a slow boat.
It's interesting the U.S. printers had to admit, we don't know...
Yeah.
It's a perfect example. We don't remember how to do these kinds of books. We don't have the tools. We don't have the technology. We don't have the people. What is it that was missing?
The technology has just gone off offshore because of, like everything else, China has become the factory of the world.
Right.
And they have learned. They have a whole ecosystem, just like Silicon Valley has an ecosystem for innovation and startup. It's not just that there's one company. It's that there is a supportive ecology of talent and other skills. The same thing with manufacturing, like Detroit was. Now it's China where it's not just that it's cheaper, it's actually faster.
Right.
It's actually better.
Right.
And I think this is sort of what we're going to see in the future of the world, is these clusters, ecosystems. You have L.A., entertainment ecosystem.
Right.
Very vast.
We've seen that in San Francisco, too. People say startup works better to be a startup in San Francisco because you can talk to other startups.
Right, right.
You can share your experience. We need to be in these clusters when we're doing stuff.
Right. And so China is right now the manufacturing of the world, but that, I think it's going to bifurcate and there'll be more specialties as these maker movement things come in. Financial industries located in New York and a little bit in London. I think these kind of clusters of skills on a global basis is what we're looking towards in the next several decades.
Your chance to ask questions. We've got about 15 more minutes with Kevin Kelly. If you're watching live, go to the chat room, and we'll answer some questions from the chat room in just a little bit. You know, I'm going to give you a cool tool that everybody should know about. If you love coffee, you can go down to the coffee shop and spend a lot of money for kind of a mediocre cup, or you could perhaps find... a bean that you like at a local roaster. But I've got a better choice for you. It's tonx.org. This should be in the next cool tools. This is a L.A. coffee roaster that said, you know what we want to do? We want to create a roaster where we're going to get the beans as fresh as possible from single-family farms. We know the farmer. We know the locale. We're going to get those shipped to us directly. We're going to roast them, and we're going to get them to our subscribers within 24 hours. So you will have the freshest beans, freshest roasting. And you'll also know, because they're single varieties, you'll know exactly what is an Ecuadorian bean from the coastal mountains of Ecuador taste like compared to a Kenyan Valley bean. And it really is a great way to become to learn more about coffee and to have a heck of a good cup of coffee every single morning for breakfast. I want you to go. You can get a free sample right now if you go to tonx.org/triangulation. You could try it absolutely for free. They have I have the bi-weekly subscription. I guess that's every other week. And it's just great. I'm learning so much about coffee. It's like a club where, and they tell you and they talk about brewing it. These are not these are really designed to be brewed in either a filter or a French press. They're kind of medium roast. Really interesting. They source, they ship, they roast, and you brew. TONX. I want you to try it. Some really interesting coffees in here, and a wonderful gift. I mean, this is nice. Something you could do very quickly is give the gift of Tonks, and you'll have it in time for Christmas. Send a subscription to the coffee lover in your life. But get your free sample right now. Tonks.org/triangulation. And we thank them so much for their support of Triangulation. Somebody wants to know, are you writing more books?
I am.
What's your next book? Do you know? Or do you not want to talk about it?
No, I like to talk about it because it kind of helps me clarify. Besides the graphic novel that is about due in June, I'm also doing a book that I'm tentatively calling The Technium Unbound, which is some of the things I've been writing recently on my blog and in magazines like Wired, and brought together in a kind of a unified way. So it's this idea that we are making a global superorganism of something.
You created the term hive mind.
Hive mind, but we're making hive mind at the planetary scale. So if you look at the number of devices and transistors that are connected together online, that they approximate the number of neurons in our brain. And if you look at the number of links on the web,
wow,
that they approximate the number of synapses in our brain.
Wow.
So, and unlike your brain, this is doubling every 18 months.
Oh, boy. So you think that the Earth could have its own mind?
So
it wouldn't be like our mind.
It would be like a grasshopper level. I mean, in the beginning, it's a grasshopper mind. It's not conscious, but there is a planetary something that we are making.
Wow.
And I did the calculations about the speed of this. If this was like, imagine this is a single machine. The speed at which this is working is phenomenal. And we're also knitting ourselves together just in other ways, you know, global airline traffic, global movement of humans. There is a sense in which I'm looking at the planet as if it was a single organism. Mm. I'm taking this metaphor seriously.
See what that implications
are. Right. Imagine if I was a galactic botanist. I'm going around looking at civilizations, and I would classify this civilization as saying, oh, they're at this stage, and it kind of does this thing.
Well, just as any human is a collection of a lot of billions of cells that are each in their own way alive and somewhat sentient, the Earth is a collection of billions of human cells.
And trillions and trillions of machines.
That metaphor can break down, but
right.
But it's an interest. So you call that the technium.
The technium, which is all this stuff together. And while your shoes and a spoon and a pen are not alive, this network of all these things together does exhibit lifelike behavior.
Right.
And I'm not saying intelligent. I'm just saying it's lifelike in the sense that it's, you know, the best way to deal with security on this network is to import an immune system, to make an immune system.
Right.
To take a biological approach.
Kind of a white cells that can come and fight.
Right. To think of this thing that we're making at the planetary scale, that to think of it as an organism of some sort, and to try and see where that goes. So that's what the book is about.
You seem to have gathered around you or partake. Some really interesting people.
Right.
The Long Now Foundation is a good example. Do you think it's important to surround yourself with thinkers? With
absolutely. I think that that I'm not the first to say it, but many, many great successful people have said that the real key is hiring people smarter than yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I try to surround myself with people who are smarter than myself.
Yeah.
And so I think we should all be doing that. And that's, by the way, the power of what we're doing is that we're no longer individuals. We actually can harness and can interact and we can work together and collaborate with people. And this is a fantastic time to be alive. You're asking me about optimism. There's no better time to be alive than right now. Never been in the
past. It's a pretty fun time.
You know, there's only one time in the history of every planet or civilization when they wire up for the first time.
That's now.
It. We're alive right now. And in 1,000 years from now, people will say, oh my gosh, to have been alive at that moment back in 2010. Could you imagine it?
That's what I loved about Woody Allen's movie Midnight in Paris, was that everybody thought that the age before them
was
really the time that would have been great, be alive in the jazz age, you know, the golden age.
We're here.
Stop thinking it was great, you know.
Yeah, no.
This is it.
This is it. This is an amazing moment in time when you can, you know, because, you know, the internet thing, you've heard about the internets, right?
Yeah, I heard about that, yeah.
We're just at the beginning of the beginning.
It's very, very early.
Nothing has happened yet.
No.
Nothing has happened.
It's only 20 years old.
All the most powerful inventions in 20 years from now have not even been invented.
Right.
All right? They have not been invented.
And our kids are the first generation to grow up with the internet. So that's right there.
Right.
Those are the ones who are going to understand it better.
You know,
than
Facebook, Google, Microsoft, they aren't going to be there in 20 years.
No. I wonder if Facebook's going to be here tomorrow. I'm starting to think it's imploding right now.
Right. So it's so in 20 years from all those powerful things, all those amazing inventions, they have not been invented. So that means, by the way, you out there, you're not late.
That's a good feeling, because I think that is something that we were talking before the show that drove Steve Jobs, that drove my generation, was we just missed the summer of love. We were just a little too young. We felt like we missed the hippie generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that drove Steve Jobs and others. And it's what drove Silicon Valley's innovations, the feeling we missed it. And then maybe wanted to make our own. Malcolm Gladwell says is that.
And they made their own.
It was a unique generation for that reason.
They made their own. I mean, they made this time. This is a unique time, a fantastic creation of wealth and opportunity. And
if you want to participate in it, what do you recommend? I mean, it would be a shame. I mean, yes, okay. So we're Da Vinci's in the Renaissance. We're in the middle of the Cambrian explosion. What do you do to say? You don't want to just sit in the bus and watch the world go by. What do you do to participate?
You make something. You try something.
Make something.
You make something that matters. You finish something.
Okay, because I've started a lot of things. Finish something is
finish
interesting.
Finish something is probably my best advice.
Do you start a lot of things that you don't finish?
Of course.
You seem like you've finished a lot of things.
But I do. I have
major accomplishments.
I have maybe above average ability to follow through and finish things.
That's really interesting.
But finish
You think that's one of the primary skills that you?
I do think it is. Is finishing things
interesting?
Stick with them and follow through.
Yeah, because I'm really good at I have 100 books on my bedside table. I'm really good at starting stuff. A lot harder to finish stuff.
Right, right. There's actually a wonderful. There's a little Easter eggs on every page. A little note at the bottom. And I'll read,
that was also a Whole Earth Catalog.
And I'll read the one on the last page. Notice from management: you have more tools, supplies, and materials for the road ahead than you have. Road ahead. Finish something.
I have to tell my daughter that. That is actually a big challenge for her and your kids' generation is there are so many choices.
Right.
It's harder when there are many choices than when there's a very constrained number of choices.
And, you know, I think this is part of what I call techno-literacy, something I'm really advocating, is that we spent 4 or 5 years learning how to read and write.
Yeah.
This was not something we learned how to do by hanging around other people who could read.
No, it was an active
skill
you had to learn.
Sit around books.
Yeah.
pay. So you had to learn it. And I think this internet stuff, digital technology, the issues we have with attention and distraction, with overwhelming, media, choice. Mm-hmm. I think this is something we actually have to be trained and learn how to do. In 4 or 5 years of very deliberate practice and study and techno literacy, we have to understand how this works. And I think this is not going to be learned by just hanging out online. I think this is a
but it's so much fun.
I know, but you know, you're not going to learn calculus just by hanging around calculus books. You've got to actually
make an effort,
make a deliberate practice, and that's a term that is. I mean, not just practice, but you have to practice so that you actually get better.
In the Buddhist sense of practice.
It's a technical term, meaning that
practice.
A deliberate practice.
Yeah.
Deliberate practice is where you actually are failing in the practice. You're trying something each time to get better than you were yesterday, and sometimes you're failing rather than just kind of repeating things again and again.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you play the same level over and over again, you're going to get good at that, but you're not going to make any advance.
So deliberate practice is a kind of practice, and this is the 10,000 hours of deliberate practice. So we need 10,000. We need to have deliberate practice and best study of how to master this new technology and these opportunities.
You have three kids. Your youngest, Tywin, is here.
Yeah, he's a senior in high school.
He's a senior in high school. So do you tell him all this, or does he? I mean, you sit down and say, Tywin, I want you to practice.
Well, you know, like any parent, you own a certain amount of this.
Your parents are probably the worst authorities on all this, right?
I have a book which you can read.
Give me a book. Well, this is a great book. Kevin, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. You're always inspiring. You always have full of wonderful ideas, and I love the optimism. Because sometimes it's easy to get a little dejected and discouraged by the way things are going. So don't be discouraged. Get a copy of Cool Tools. It's on Amazon. Actually, best thing to do, go to Kevin's site, kk.org, or cool-tools.org, and pick up a copy, a catalog of possibilities. This will open your mind. But don't be stymied by the choices in here.
Right.
Pick something and do it.
Follow through. Finish something.
I love that. Finish something. Thank you, Kevin. We're going to have to, unfortunately, finish this show.
It's been a real pleasure and privilege and honor
Always
to
a
be
pleasure.
Here.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for being here.
Great.
We do triangulation every Wednesday afternoon. Are we going to move to Mondays at 1?
Mondays at 1 p.m. Starting,
okay.
Starting January 6th.
So this is our last episode of the year.
Yes.
Next week we'll have a best of. And boy, when you look in toto at the people we have got to talk to over the last year, it is incredible. The best little bits from all of the year's shows. That's next week. The following week is New Year's Day. I'm going to be in bed asleep because I will have just completed we're going to do a 24-hour broadcast on New Year's Day, starting with New Zealand, the first time zone. We're going to count down every time zone, 27 time zones or 26 time zones, until I fall over and it collapses in a heap. So no show the following week on New Year's Day. And then our first show will be that Monday, January 6th at 1 p.m. Pacific. That's 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2100 UTC. Do we know who that's going to be, or is it a surprise?
That will be...
Karsten, our producer, is telling me. Peter Krogh. A wonderful interview we already did. It's in the can, as they say, with one of my favorite photographers, the author of the Digital Asset Management book. Lots of great interviews planned for the year, though, and we're going to have a lot of fun on triangulation. So remember, new time, Mondays, 1 p.m., 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2100 UTC on twit.tv. And, of course, after the fact, all of our 132 episodes are available. You can download them from twit.tv/TRI. We put them on YouTube. What's the YouTube channel? YouTube.com/triangulation?
Yep.
If you wanted to watch on YouTube. Half the shows now are blocked with phony copyright claims, but that's another story. Get it from the website. Or subscribe. Use your favorite Netcast client and download it, and you always have a copy. And you could print them into a book and put them on the wall, and you'll have a physical copy for your descendants. Thanks for joining us. Well, thanks to John Slonina, our technical director, for running the show. Karsten Bondi, our producer. Thanks to you for joining us. We'll see you next time on Triangulation.